Hi, this is Katie Day and welcome to Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women across the world. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They are guaranteed to always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Catherine Schulk. Catherine is a VIP member of Worldwide Who's Who for Excellence in Worldwide Education and Attainment and was named the top female executive for excellence in professional training and coaching earlier this year. Catherine is a 20-year veteran of the software industry and has been involved in sales for most of that time. In that time, she has been involved in over 3,000 sales enablement initiatives. She is a certified coach, speaker, and trainer for the John Maxwell Company. She is an executive in numerous organizations and currently runs her own sales enablement business in Quasi Communications. She started in sales as a representative for Informix in Central Africa in 1994 and ended her corporate career 20 years later when she was the director of worldwide sales enablement for Informatica. She has held senior regional and global positions including business development, marketing management, director of learning, commercial enablement, sales operations, channel enablement and sales enablement. Her work with the Ubuntu Mission, Tear Fund, Work Angel Wisdom, World Vision and other charities highlight Catherine's desire to make the world a better place. Thank you, Catherine. That's quite some bio. And for some reason,
Katie.
I have a real problem saying the world in the word enablement. My tongue
can't go. It's a big word.
So tell us a bit more about your work to make a world a better place. I think we all have that desire on some level, don't we? That our time here means something and that we don't waste it. So where did this desire to make the world a better place for you come from?
You know, Katie, I think you're 100% right. I think everyone really has an innate desire to do something to make it better for other people in the world, even if it's the person next door to you. For me personally, I was born and raised in South Africa, and so I'm used to seeing what it looks like for people who are underprivileged, people living in townships, people without means, people without clothes, without food, you know, but most of all, people without education,
right,
and therefore without opportunity. Now, you know, reality says, you know, we're not all going to have the same opportunities because we're all at different places and stations in our lives. But without education, what chance do people really have? It's really hard for them. You know, we see so much systemic issues because of the lack of education, right from the poaching of rhinos right through to, you know, crimes being committed against humanity because people, they don't have an alternative. So I'm very, very passionate about equipping people with business as well as life skills to empower themselves to create their own incomes, whether that be through getting themselves off the street, starting a little business, or finding a job or getting a better job, depending on where they're at. And when I say start a business, I also don't mean sophisticated businesses like that we might think of in our Western culture, but just even if it's a fruit and vegetable stand on the side of the road, it's still something and it still empowers people and it gives them a purpose.
How do you balance that with the raising of expectations? So if you say, and I absolutely agree with you, education is the key for growth, whether that's personal growth, whether that's the growth of a village, a town, a country, whatever. But if you are going in and saying to people with education, that enables you to do X, Y, and Z, so they have a raised expectation of what they may achieve, and they acquire the education and the skills, but the opportunities aren't there, how do you then help them? How do you manage the expectations that you're building with people?
So that's a really powerful question, and it's something we're very mindful of. We don't want to go in there and create false hope, you know, and get people excited. And then, you know, we all pack up and leave and go home, and then they go home back to their old lives. So we're very careful. You know, we don't just focus on the knowledge aspect, the education aspect. We focus on the whole person.
Right.
So the Ubuntu Mission is the nonprofit organization that I work with. And we focus on the whole person, mind, heart, and soul. And then we tackle the business aspect. Now, in Africa, in South Africa, there's a massive cultural divide between, you know, what you and I might be used to in our lives and the way they think and operate.
Right.
And we've got to overcome those cultural divides. And also, we have a big challenge in Africa, and probably in most poverty-stricken parts of the world, people expect the government to hand out jobs, to give money, or they expect something to come to them without them having done anything for it. And that's the attitude we work on to change. And we make it very clear, you are responsible for your success, for your prosperity, whatever your definition of success is.
Yeah.
And we're very, very passionate about ensuring that success isn't just financial well-being. It's emotional, it's relational, it's health of mind, body, soul, your life, your community, your family, as well as, you know, the income that comes into your bank account every month.
Yeah.
So we're very careful that the expectation is set right up front that you are responsible for your well-being, not the government, not your parents, not your cousin, not your friends, you. And that's a huge challenge for us, because then we come up against the cultural traditional limitations that people have, especially for women.
Right.
And women in the black communities, they've not been valued, you know, the way that women in the Western world may have been. And they have different places, there's different expectations set on them. Some of them never finish school because the boys are considered more important in their cultures than the girls. And so we're very careful about setting that expectation right up front and making sure they understand it's, and what we equip them with, they are responsible to go and do something with.
Okay. So that, yeah, they make a commitment to you at the beginning that they will actually action the skills that they acquire. They will do something positive with them.
Yes, because we've equipped them with a different way of thinking about themselves, their lives, and their responsibilities.
How do you help them manage the shift in relationships? Because the work that I do with a lot of women around the world in the workplace, every woman says the men should come on this. I say, yeah, absolutely, because what can happen is that the women come on a personal development program in business, they go back to the office and nothing's changed. And the men say, because they haven't been made aware of the importance of gender diversity in the workplace, they say, well, you've just been on this funny course, you know, give her a couple of weeks, she'll be back to normal. And because their mindset has stayed the same, it's really, a woman is then pushing against this brick wall to try and implement the new her and integrate the new her in the workplace. So how do you help people manage the shifts in those dynamics when people who are very close to them may have a lot invested in keeping them where they were and not supporting them in where they are?
There's kind of a couple of thoughts that I would give to that. Most of the people and the women that we see come through our programs aren't in a workplace.
But I'm just thinking of the dynamics, say, when they go back to their home.
Right, yeah, so that's why. So there's the two sides. So most of them aren't in a workplace, but they're in some kind of community role or family role. You know, it's not something that's going to change overnight. But the most important thing that we can equip people with is how they see themselves.
Right.
And if they can really grasp that, it doesn't matter what the other person may or may not think about you when you go back into your working world. What's important is how you see yourself.
Okay.
And you know, and that you value yourself and that you have a purpose and a vision for your life. And you understand that, and we infuse that into them. It's a 4-day program we take them through. And we spend literally 2 days of that just focusing on the person, the limiting beliefs, their purpose, their vision, their mission. And for a lot of these people, these are words they've never heard. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I have a purpose? You know, what does that even mean? And it's really, really... Mm-hmm. It's a huge eye-opener. So they go out very motivated and inspired and really believing that they have worth, they have value to add and a contribution to make, not just in the role that they currently play in their lives, in their homes, or in their families or communities, but you know, in the wider community for sure, but for themselves.
Right. Right.
So unfortunately, you know, your question, you raise a very, very good point. We can't change everybody and change everything. Mm. And we certainly can't control the environments that these people go back into. All we can do is instill inside of them a sense of personal value, self-worth, hope, and purpose.
And hope that they then go back and be the beacon that other people want to follow. So it inspires
Correct.
Other people to change who they are.
And we tell them that's part of what they're there for.
Yeah.
You're here not just to do this for yourself, but you're here to bless your community.
Yeah.
And we actually make that very clear. It's part of this program, part of your role. And we get them to write letters at the end of the program and give them to us. And I have some of those letters, you know, perhaps one day I could read some out to you, where you'll see they can't wait to get out and share what they've learned with their family and their friends.
Yeah, well, because they feel motivated and a sense, as you say, that sense of purpose, that sense of being able to contribute. And it's yes. a hugely inbuilt thing in our DNA, isn't it, to be able to contribute. And it's that thing about education I find fascinating. The hunger for education and for learning and for change within the communities where it isn't an automatic option
right.
is huge. And you would think, wouldn't you, logically, that the environment that you and I come from, where it is a given, you know, education is just a natural part of our life from a young age, and we don't have to stop
right.
learning. We can choose to continue to learn
yes.
as an adult. That education isn't valued and respected as much. We have a very, it's almost as though when things are too easy, because when I think of the attitude of a lot of school children in schools in England, they don't value education, and they don't get supported with education back home either. And teachers are not respected. And I think, when did this happen? You know, we should be so full of gratitude.
I agree.
When did this happen?
I agree. So, you know, we take it for granted in our culture, school, varsity, college, or you know, even if you don't go to varsity or college after school, you know, you can further your education through courses.
Mm.
And we have access at our fingertips to a whole world of learning, e-learning, you know, long distance learning, the Khan Academy, you know. But for people in these African communities, you know, most of them don't even really have wireless access, you know, and when they do, it's sporadic and they can't afford it. So where are they going to get access to this kind of education? But the other issue is, what kind of education? You know, most of the education is only focusing on the knowledge and the skill to start a business or think about a business.
Right.
But what about the whole person?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the change really comes. So that's what we're very passionate about. Of course, we teach them about finance, revenue, sales, marketing, legal, operations, goal setting, business planning. And we're not talking about sophisticated levels of knowledge either, but just the right amount for them to understand what does it mean to be a business owner or a person in business, and what does it mean to be an ethical leader, an ethical business owner, you know, what are laws, what are regulations, why do we have to pay taxes, you know. So, and the thing that's really interesting is in the cultures in a lot of these African communities, there's a lot of things that they do completely in their world is completely normal, such as bribery. It's not even a question, and it's something we bump up against regularly, and they go, well, what's wrong with that? Because it's normal business for them. In our world, it's just like, wait a minute, but that doesn't sound right. So we have a lot that we work with when we get down
interesting
there.
Interesting. I mean, my personal belief, I remember years ago I went trekking in Nepal, and that was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. And what hit me was how much the children valued the education and how proud these little kiddies were coming out of these corrugated iron huts in immaculate school uniforms, standing there really, really proud, wanting to have their photos taken. And I came back thinking, oh my God, you know, if I could get every child in this country to have that experience, to change their view of what they have handed to them on a plate. Do you think that something like that would be of benefit, where different cultures can learn from each other in that way, starting from 5 and 6 years old?
Absolutely. Honestly, I so agree with what you're saying. I don't know how we would begin to do that.
No.
But it would be wonderful if we could have programs where maybe we take, even if it's just for a few days at a time, we take small groups of children from the UK or first world countries.
Yeah.
And they come and see. But don't just see, they need to stay in it for a couple of days and really meet and greet. You know, one of the things that has always moved me in this work that we do, and we've been doing this for over 10 years now, when I meet people from the townships who live in shacks, they have no flushing toilets, they have no running water, they don't have taps, they have barely any electricity. And as you said, you meet them, they're all very clean, their clothes are ironed and clean. But you know what amazes me is the gratitude that they have in their hearts. And they have nothing, and they live in really difficult environments, crime ridden. You can't even go to the toilet without the threat of being attacked. It's dirty, it's unsafe, you know, your children are unsafe. And yet, when you meet them and you say, how are you today? They don't look at you and go, yeah, I'm all right. Well, I'm okay, I'm fine. They'll say things to you like, I am empowered, I am enlightened, I am a survivor. And I'm like, wow, okay. That, if we could take some of that and put that into our schools here, that actually might be better and easier than trying to take our people in our culture into their world.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe, you know, if I could bottle up the light that I see in these people's eyes, who live in these environments, and put that into people in our world, I think our world would be a lot better place.
It would. And I strongly believe that the developed world has far more to learn from the developing world than the other way around.
I agree.
And, you know, I get a little bit cross with the arrogance of the developed world, because, you know, the general attitude tends to be one of superiority. And we will grace you with our presence, and we will just throw money at you because that's all you need. And you know, like these wonderful things, you know, like what's coming up soon, Children in Need, which is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. You know, Band Aid and Live Aid and all of that. Nothing's changed. You know, money isn't what's needed, but it's part of the arrogance of the West.
Yeah.
And we really need to get over ourselves, because actually we could learn a hell of a lot more from these communities than they can learn from us. That's just my view. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But it is my view. You know, and some kind of exchange like that, where the communities and the world come together and we take the best from each.
Yes, yes.
Is the way forward. How you manifest that and make that happen, I don't know. I don't know.
A huge don't know. So, you know, until we have the answer to that question, we do what we do. We one person at a time, one family at a time, one community at a time, one Ubuntu mission at a time. Over the 10 years, we've probably had more than 2,000-3,000 people go through our programs.
I was going to ask, how long have you been doing it? So 10 years with Ubuntu.
Yeah, the Ubuntu mission has been going for 10 years. I myself have been involved for about 6 or 7 of those 10 years. We go down to a few times a year, sometimes 2 or 3 times, and to run these programs. We would like to do more. However, you know, we operate on a shoestring budget because we pay for everything ourselves. We raise money. Sometimes we're able to raise funds. And the way we do that is we run conferences and we speak, or we go to conferences as we speak. Sometimes we will run business workshops for big companies in South Africa, and the money they give us for that will go straight to the Ubuntu mission.
Right.
We've done silent art auctions. But for the most part, it's just money that comes out of our own back pockets because we believe in it.
Wow.
And, you know, being in South Africa, dollars and pounds goes a very long way.
Right.
because of the exchange rate and just the way things are. So, you know, I think that the West does have a lot to contribute. Throwing money at people is not the answer.
No.
And what we see is two schools of thinking. There are community leaders who say money is not going to solve our problem. We need skills. We need the right attitudes. We need hope. We need training. We need education. But the majority of people that we talk to, they just want the money.
Right.
Show us the money. Well, or they'll tell us things like, well, I can't start a business because I don't have the money. They see the lack of money as their number one problem.
Right.
And we actually change that and turn it on its head and say it's not the lack of money at all. It's simply the lack of understanding how to go and do something. So, for example, we teach them that instead of going needing money to start your business, you need customers. Yeah. Go find customers. Oh, how do I do that? Okay, we teach them the planning. Who is your target customer? What's the problem you're solving? You know, what? Why would they buy your solution? You know, we teach them the wonderful quote from Simon Sinek: "People don't buy what you do; they buy why you do it." You know, that is revolutionary thinking for them. They've never heard that concept before.
It's revolutionary thinking for a lot of people here as well.
Yeah, well, don't get me started on that, because in my 20-plus years in sales, I still see that in our Western world. But for them, a complete change of thinking. And you can see them go, wait, what? I don't need to get the money first. Well, of course you need some money. We're not saying you don't need money, but depending on the nature of the business you want to start, you don't need to go to the bank for a loan for 50,000 Rand. Go find 10 customers. Start offering your services, start getting the money in, and then you grow from there. So, you know, we try to be very practical in what we teach them and equip them, at the same time really shifting the way they see and think about business, life, relationships, and themselves.
Wow.
And the other thing we're very careful to do is we don't throw their culture out, you know, out the window, because there's wonderful things about every culture in the world.
Yeah.
But then there are things about cultures that have created a lot of fear, a lot of limitations, and a lot of barriers for people. So we do work with trying to overcome those barriers, but we don't throw the culture out the window either. You know, so as I said, there's a lot of wonderful things about, you know, African culture.
Mm. What are some of the success stories that you've seen over the 6-7 years you've been involved?
God, you know, there's so many success stories at very different levels, but if you wanted to just, you know, almost every person walks out with a fresh vision of who they are as a person.
Right.
And you can see the personal breakthroughs. People come with the most terrible burdens and, you know, chains, balls and chains on their ankles, so to speak, from people who are rape victims, victims of some kind of abuse, or women who are suppressed, and just breaking free from the pains of those things emotionally and mentally and spiritually, right through to we see people who are now heading towards becoming multimillionaires.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, we have a young lad, which perhaps we can interview on our radio station one day. His name is Bulalani. And when he came to us, he had pretty much lost everything, including hope. And he was actually attempting to take his life. That's the kind of the level that he was at in his life. Came into our program. And that was 6-7 years ago, maybe, I think. And Bulalani today has he has a catering business. He started, and the story itself is a really incredible story, but he got the contract to run the canteen for the Tembisa Hospital.
Good.
And Tembisa is a very large black township in Johannesburg, 2 million people. He revolutionized that canteen using all of the things we had taught them. So, for example, we teach them about creativity and innovation and what does that actually mean and how do you innovate. And using the principles that we taught them, they were able to get a whole lot of customers in on their first day. So they got the contract, but they had to stock the kitchen themselves with the food that they were going to cook and supply to the hospital staff. And they didn't know how they were going to get the money to do that. They somehow scraped a little bit together. And then they thought, well, we have to make money on the first day. We have to sell all the food that we prepare. so that we can buy food for the next day of the canteen. And what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? How do we attract them? Because they're used to this canteen. There's nothing nice about the canteen historically. So what they did was they innovated. They took a very simple concept. In the Black Township, there is a traditional food called that. It's called like a fet cook. It's kind of like a donut.
Right.
It kind of has the texture and similar taste to a donut. And they're served round. They're made round like donuts. They're bland and plain, but they're very traditional and very popular in the townships. They changed the shape. So instead of making round ones, they made square ones. And do you know, people were flocking in just to see these square fed cooks. And
oh,
they
my
sold
God.
Everything. They sold all the food that day, enough to buy food for the next day. And they have gone from that day strength to strength. Bulalani has been running that canteen now for a couple of years. He's getting the contracts to do other hospitals, other businesses, companies, big companies, which I can't really name the name of, are wanting him to come in and do their canteens or do their big corporate events.
Wow.
He's got it. Yeah, I mean, he is just expanding. He's been interviewed on South African television as, you know, young Black Entrepreneur of the Year.
Wow.
So we have lots of success stories. And the other one that comes to mind is a young lady that we practically picked up off the street. You know, she was pretty much homeless with her mom and her baby daughter.
Wow.
And through the training, she was able to start a little business selling fruit and vegetables on the side of the road, one little table. And she's now gotten herself to the point where she's earning enough income. She's bought herself a little house. And her mom and her baby now are off the street, living in a simple home. So all of those are success stories, right? From just individual breakthroughs to, you know, the multimillionaire direction that we see with Bulalani.
It is incredible, isn't it? And you're right, you said at the beginning of the interview, whatever success looks like, and it looks very different to all of us, doesn't it? When I'm taking people through training and I ask them their view of success, and it's fascinating what comes out when you ask people to really dig deep,
yeah,
and to fast forward in their lives. And I say, okay, now you're looking back retrospectively, what will you have done that you consider your life as being successful? And it's fascinating what comes out. And it's never anything to do with money.
Correct. Very few people actually say it's money, it's wealth, it's material things. Mm. And so for me personally, success is having the love and the respect of those closest to me. Mm. That's for me the number one thing. And then there's many other aspects of success.
Mm.
And so, you know, we don't teach that money is a bad thing.
No, that's also really important as well. Yeah.
Right, because money is not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Money is a powerful resource. Yeah. It's also a necessary resource. And so we have to also break down that mindset that, oh, if money's a bad thing, money's a bad thing. And it's not.
No.
The love of money is a problem, but money itself.
Yeah, money is innocent. Money just is.
Correct.
It's what you do with it that dictates whether it's good or bad. And that's the person. Yes. It's not the money. The money's completely innocent.
Correct. You know, but we do say that money is an amplifier and an accelerator. It will bring out what's already inside you.
Ah, interesting. Interesting.
So that's why it's important we tackle the whole person in our training.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Bulalani is doing really well today, and but he's still the same person that he was before. He's a good man. He cares about people around him. He wants to give back, and he's also a mentor and a coach, you know, and he's very grateful to, and his heart is still filled with gratitude, and he's remained that humble person that we know and love from the day we met him.
Yeah.
So despite his money, he's still himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which is very important.
It is important. And to go through, I'm guessing, going through the program in the way that you take people through gives them that very solid grounding and that sense of connectedness with who they were, connectedness to the earth. So, you know, you stay balanced, because I think people who have a lot of money very, very quickly, you see it in inverted commas celebrity culture of today in the West, of people without that solid connection to the earth, that real solid grounding of the core of who they are, they can't cope with the money and they go completely off the rails because they don't have the skills to handle it.
Correct.
So having that in preparation is vital, isn't it?
100%. 100%. So we don't do any training without that.
Mm, really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really exciting. Exciting stuff. Hugely exciting stuff.
We love it. And as I said, we do it a few times a year. We focus at the moment mostly on Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
We have done a few of these programs in other parts of South Africa, Bloemfontein and the Durban area.
Right.
We'd love to expand more.
Right.
Obviously, generating the necessary funds is important.
Yeah.
But so is also people stepping forward to say, hey, look, I have business skills, I have experience, I'd love to give some of that back and contribute. We would love for people to be mentors. So as the people go through our programs, we try to pair them up with somebody who they can meet with either face-to-face or over the phone once a month and just mentor them, talk about their business, help them with their business planning, maybe review a plan or two, help them tackle some dilemma. So we look for business mentors.
Right.
We are a faith-based organization, but we don't limit to who gets involved and who supports. So anyone can contribute. We obviously would love trainers and more people to step forward to come and be part of the actual programs and train. We would love to see the same program go around the world, certainly across Africa.
Right.
We did one in Russia.
Did you? So, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's also interest in the US. So even in our first world countries, people are looking for this kind of training.
Well, because you have the disparity, don't you, in any country.
Mm-hmm.
It's depending on the scale. Sometimes I think the more developed countries, the disparity can be even greater.
Yes, and I think one of the reasons for that is we don't see it so readily because it's not so obvious, so we don't think about it.
Yeah.
So there are great divides first world countries.
Absolutely.
So we work with anybody in business. We work with local churches and church leaders. We also try to communicate and work with the tribe leaders, community leaders, schools, government agencies and organizations. To get them to understand what it is we try to do and how we do it. And we have people come and visit us. We've had people in the military come. We've had school leaders. And one of the other things we try to do is, as a faith-based organization, is we try to bring the church communities into a more relevant role in their communities.
Right.
In the black cultures, there's again, we see our church leaders as only people that we talk to when we have a relational or spiritual problem. Why not a business problem? why am I not going to my local church to discuss my business problems? So we actually work with churches and we put pastors of churches. We've done pastor training. We've gone through the same program because a lot of the pastors in the churches are also running businesses.
Of course, yeah. They are running small businesses,
too.
Aren't they?
And let me tell you, we see some of the same cultural challenges and some of the same ethical challenges. But so we try to bring whole communities together in the work that
amazing.
We do.
Have you ever thought of going for comic relief funding?
No, we haven't.
You might want to think about that.
Okay, something for us to look into.
Mm. We'll have a chat after the interview.
Okay, let's do that.
About that, yeah. So where do you want to take this? You want to expand it to in other places in South Africa? You want to take it out of Africa? You've done one in Russia. What is the big vision for this? What's the ultimate vision?
Our hearts, I think our big vision, that's a great question. Our big vision is to see underprivileged communities transformed.
Right.
So whether that's in Africa or in other parts of the world, and remember, underprivileged, as we've already said, looks different in different parts of the world.
Mm.
So some may have a roof over their head, but they're bankrupt spiritually, right, emotionally, mentally, and even skill-wise, they're bankrupt. So our big vision is to see this go into all underprivileged communities in the world. But I think our passion and our hearts are Africa.
Yeah,
and
understandably.
We'd love to see this expand across Africa. So we are talking to people in Kenya.
Right.
We're hopefully maybe going to be considering some programs in the DRC.
Ah, okay.
The Democratic Republic of Congo, depending on which way things go there.
Yeah.
There was talk about Ghana. Mm-hmm. And we were actually going to go into Ghana, and then Ebola hit.
Ah, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, we have these things we have to be mindful of.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, we see South Africa as a beacon, a real, you know, South Africa is considered to be the HIV, the biggest country with the biggest HIV issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, especially in our world, we see HIV very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see the real impact. Whole generations are being wiped out by HIV, leaving hundreds of children as orphans.
Yeah.
Whose grandparents are now having to raise these children. And some of them have up to 8, 9, 10 grandchildren that they're trying to raise. So so the Ubuntu Mission works to equip people with life and business skills. And then there's some other organizations that I work with who are much more at the grassroots that are actually in the townships, helping people, like, from anything that needs to be done, from helping old ladies cross the road, or if an old lady's shack has burnt down, they will go and do what it takes to help her rebuild it and find clothes for her and her kids. That's an organization called Amavinki Vonko, which I'd love to talk to you about at some point as well. So, you know, I know there's a lot of good work being done in underprivileged communities all over the world, and I just don't think there's just not enough. We need more.
And it's difficult not to get overwhelmed by the issue, isn't it? And
yes.
And to recognize that we can't heal the world by tomorrow. And it's about recognizing what part can we play, and recognizing we are part of that bigger collective. And what may seem very small from our personal point of view, when you add that together, create something huge and incredibly powerful. And if enough people do that, we will eventually create the tipping point.
I agreed. You know, and you know, if every person who was in there had the means could give $10, you know, every 6 months to something in these places, there would be huge change. Or if they committed to an hour of time, I would love to create a pool of people who have got skills. You know, not necessarily to train people on business skills, but if there were people who had graphic art skills and could donate an hour of their time to nonprofit work each month.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Every contribution somebody could make would make a difference.
So it's about people thinking, being more creative, and not thinking, okay, I don't run my own business. I don't have anything to offer. So rather than making that assumption, it's about having a conversation with you and saying, I don't think I've got anything to offer. However, this is what I do. And for you to help unlock what they could offer.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I said, you know, whether you're a blog writer or you're a graphic artist or a videographer, or you edit documents, or you create PowerPoints, it doesn't matter what your skill is. Somehow, I believe every person can make a contribution with what they have. Every person has value. Every person matters. Whether you're the people on the receiving side or the people on the giving side.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because you need both. Otherwise, it's not going to work, is it?
Yep.
What's the sustainability of the Ubuntu Mission? How are you... Are you creating the next generation who will take over? So it continues ad infinitum.
Well, that's a really interesting and challenging question. So the answer is yes, and it's a slow process. So, you know, we have people that come through our program who step forward to be more involved. We try to focus more on building people locally than having more international people fly in every year.
Right.
Obviously, there's a troop of us that fly in every year, and we love to do it, and probably will do it for all time. We have others who come just once, fly in once, participate once, and then they don't come back. That's fine too. But they stay involved in other ways. But the legacy that we want to do is we want to raise up local people in those communities who can not necessarily take over, but lead. You know, we've just appointed a national director
in
South Africa, and he lives in the township. His name is Tuane. And so we are equipping people to take this work on with us and forward. But it's a slower process.
Yeah.
Than I would have liked it to be.
Yeah, things usually are, unfortunately, aren't they?
Reality is, Katie, people are busy.
Yeah.
You know, I have I have a full-time job and companies, you know, you do, and all of the people who are involved in the Ubuntu mission, we all have full-time lives.
Yeah.
And so we're doing this on top of everything else that we do. We're all across different time zones. So we work with what we've got.
Yeah.
And if we had, if we could afford to put 10 people on the ground permanently, we would do that. But it's not the way that we run, and we're just a group of people who want to make a difference in the world. We do the best we can with what we've got, and at the same time build out the communities, build out local leaders to take on more and more of this work.
And do you find that the work you do with the Ubuntu mission impacts on the work you do with your paid job?
Do you mean like positive or negative impact?
Well, either. I mean, do you learn from the people that you work with through the Ubuntu mission that come on the program? Do you have your own aha moments and insights that you then take back and incorporate into the work you do with the people who pay you?
Yes and no. So, you know, number one, I always, whilst I walk away exhausted from all of our missions, I walk away inspired. And almost refreshed, you know, mentally and emotionally, because there's so much gratitude that comes from the people we are working with. You can't help but be moved and inspired. And so I bring that back into my job, my life, my clients, and I remind people around me how blessed we are. I don't get in their face and say, you know, you should be more grateful. But when I'm doing a sales training program, or when I'm helping a client develop a you know, a new learning asset for their sales teams, you know, I infuse that into the dialogues, and I try to always inspire people in the corporate world that I work in, like I get inspired by these people. It was in the middle of one of those workshops, the Ubuntu Mission workshops, that I stood. I think I stopped in mid sentence. I looked at this whole room of people who were there, excited to be there, so grateful that somebody showed up and gave some time to equip them with some skills. And I could feel the excitement. I could see change in their lives, in their faces, in their thinking. And I said, I remember standing there and I thought to myself, this is what matters in life. This, making a difference in other people's lives. And that's when I decided to quit my full-time job and get out of my 20-plus corporate career.
Ah, that was the turning point for you. Wow.
That was, yeah. I'd been doing the Ubuntu mission for quite some years already.
Right.
But it was 2012, and it was August of 2012, and I was in the middle of this workshop, and I just thought, this is it. This is what counts. This is what matters. But I do appreciate not everyone is going to have that opportunity to suddenly quit their full-time jobs.
Yeah.
You know, people have got families to take care of, responsibilities. But everyone wants to make a contribution, and I believe everyone can. You just got to look at a creative way of how you can contribute. You know, maybe we should think about creating some kind of technology platform where people can log on and say, look, I've got this skill, and I can donate an hour of my time a week to, I don't know, writing a blog or writing a news article or reviewing nonprofit websites. Maybe we should create something like that where people can come and offer their skills. I don't know.
Maybe go into schools.
Secondary
schools. And offer it as a project for a class or get them involved.
If you can. If you can. But I do. I also know there's a lot of people who really want to give back, but they're nervous about exposing themselves because they're such high-profile people in the corporate world. They're a little unsure about, if I expose my name and my brand and my profile, I'm going to get inundated. Give back?
Yeah.
And so so we do get people who want to bless the mission financially, but they don't want to be they don't want their names out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which is fair enough. Do you learn
That's
anything
profit.
Yeah. Do you learn anything about yourself? I mean, something that I find most practically every time I work with a client, whether it's one-to-one coaching or with a group in a training, is that I will find by some miracle that the people I'm interacting with on the other side are a mirror for what's going on for me. And I will always learn something from them. Do you find that happens with you?
Not only do I find that that happens to me every time, it's a philosophy I live by.
Ah, okay.
So I think being teachable and being open to learning, every person, good or bad, no matter what station in life they're in, rich or poor, has something to teach me. Whether that be just reflect on, as you say, something that's already inside me, or make me aware of something that I could or should be doing or shouldn't be doing, or remind me of something that I had forgotten about years ago, and I'm like, oh, I remember that. Mm. You know, so I don't think there is a client engagement or an Ubuntu mission that I get involved in that I don't learn something about myself and grow in some way, or just be refreshed or reminded of something.
And it's being open to that learning, isn't it? And being willing, be willing to accept that we don't know everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but the other thing I also remind myself is I show up at the Ubuntu mission, I step in front of 20, 30, sometimes 60 people who are living in, you know, a third world poverty-stricken township. Most of them don't have jobs, money in the bank. And, you know, sometimes I can think, well, you know, I've got all these years of corporate experience. These people don't know anything. But number one, they live a life that I don't understand, that I haven't had to live. And I got to, and I remind myself, they've had to learn things that I will never learn.
Yeah.
That I never learn and experience.
Yeah.
And I thank God that I don't have to go through that.
Yeah.
But I remember when I'm in front of them, yes, I have skill and experience that they don't have, and I can impart that onto them and teach them and help them, but they've learned things I will never know.
Yeah, absolutely. One really, really strong thing for me many years ago, about 20 years ago, I was working for an education welfare department, and we worked with children who came from Romani families, traveller families. And I can remember having a conversation with the grandmother in these travelling families who said, if it all goes, excuse my language, but I'm going to say exactly what she said, if it all goes tits up, none of you will cope and we'll be fine. And I thought, and I sat there and I thought, you know what, she's right.
So wait a minute, she said, if it all goes pear-shaped.
Yes, yes, that's much nicer way of putting it, Catherine, thank you.
None of you will cope,
but we'll be fine. He says, you know, if technology ended tomorrow, you would have no idea how to survive. If electricity went, what happens? You're standing there completely impotent because you have no idea what to do. She said, we'll all be fine.
Right.
And I thought, oh my God, she is so right. She is so right. So skill is a very interesting word, isn't it? And these people have skills and life skills and knowledge that you and I will probably never have.
Agreed. And I do remember that. But it also stirs, you know, I have a lot of compassion for them. Now, the one thing I do want to encourage people, because it's something I work on for myself, sometimes I look at them and I look at their lives and I look at the places they live and they have no shoes or whatever it is, and I feel guilty. And I think, I have this great place in the UK, this fantastic country I live in, it's safe, I have this beautiful home, I have money in the bank, I've got clients, I travel, I do this, I do that. But one thing I want to remind people and say to people, don't feel guilty. You know, we have to dump that.
Yeah.
We are where we are.
Yeah.
You know, you were born into the station of your life that you were in, not by your choice.
Yeah.
And they are in the station that they're in, not by their choice, but I just encourage people, you know, don't feel bad about being a person with means being a have.
Yeah.
You are who you are, and you're very blessed to have that. I'm very blessed. But in turn, I want to bless others.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's really important, because that guilt could be paralyzing.
It can be. Yeah, it absolutely can be. Yeah.
Yeah. So in three words, what message would you like to give to the people who are listening?
About the Ubuntu mission or about anything?
And what that means to you, what it means to the world, you know, because that can be replicated.
You know, I don't know if I have three words. Mm-hmm. I have one word, which I'd like to make one statement about.
Okay, cool.
Okay. In the world's view, they say, where there is life, there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
But in God's view, where there is hope, there is life.
Ah.
And it is hope that we want to bring into the nations and these communities with, of course, practical skills and abilities.
Fantastic. That's a great way to end, Catherine. Thank you so much. It's been a joy, which I knew it would be. And a
Thank
wonderful
you,
message. A wonderful message for everybody to hear. Thank you.
Really appreciate your time. Thank you for inviting me onto your show. I really appreciate it.
Great. You've been listening to Katie Day with Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Women are fearless, fabulous, courageous, awesome. In fact, we just rock.